How's it going? How you been?
Let's get started.
What's scrap, man?
Yo, yo.
You are now tuned in to Al Joe, the Funk Master. Watch your grill, yoga, knock that cold fast. And talking shit, now we talking facts. When the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about the double. It's the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I roll the seas, planet, fuck a name and a fame. Only legacy remains, remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfucker!
That part always gets me. And we are back to the weekly scraps, episode 102, Max Holloway versus Brian. Wow. That is hilarious. Brian Ortega versus Korean Zombie. Damn, has it been that long since I saw Brian Ortega in the octagon? Yes, it has. 2 years now. I'm joined by our guy, Cody Murrow. We're going to discuss the fights from last weekend, give you guys a quick recap on everything MMA and UFC before we get into next week's card later this week with Khabib Nurmagomedov. I'm going to get crucified in the comments. I know it. Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje. I think I saved it.
Boom. Love Don't it. Hate There's two of them. That. There's two of them on the card. So you got to really start getting that down by the time that we get to the preview.
I know. It's so bad. But the other one just got staph infection, so I think he's actually off the card.
Ooh.
Kind of unfortunate.
Wrinkle.
Yeah. So that's where everything is at right now. We had some good fights this past weekend. The main one that we want to obviously talk about is the main event. So we're going to get started with that first. A couple of takeaways for me with this one, and it's a little awkward for me to look at Cody right now because my camera's here, my webcam's up here. I'm trying to make this as smooth as possible, but it's a little tough. I'm just figuring out how to use the webcam on this guy, and I tell you what, it has been nothing short of amazing, but definitely had its technical difficulties along the way. But this fight was a great fight for me. I thought it was a great way for Max Holloway. Oh my God. I thought this was great for Brian Ortega. This is so bad. I feel like we should just start this over.
Well, I wonder, does Max listen to the pod? Max is like, what the hell did I do? I'm in Hawaii and playing video games, man. I'm just trying to keep my head low.
Oh man, my brain is all over the place right now. I got 1,000 things going on up here right now being processed. But I thought this was a great comeback fight for Brian Ortega. In the beginning, I did think this was a tough matchup because we didn't know how much of an improvement he made over the past 2 years from that stand-up exchange that he had with Max Holloway, which was very, very one-sided as it could possibly get. And when I see that and I see another stand-up fighter who's dominant in his stand-up exchanges with a lot of his previous fights and the Korean Zombie, Chen Sung Jung, I had to lean towards the side of the Korean Zombie if Brian Ortega couldn't get the fight to the ground. And we all know he's not the best wrestler. He isn't able to get the fight to the ground when typically guys shoot in on him because he just keeps coming forward and puts that pressure on you. That wasn't the case with this one. He was able to get the fight down to the ground a couple of times. And I would like to say that I think he looked better in the stand-up department than the Korean Zombie. For whichever reason, it was Brian Ortega's night that night.
Yeah, Aljo, I think you really said it perfectly because a lot of people were coming out of that fight. They said, you know, Ortega looked like this new guy. He's got this new striking technique. He's really changing levels a lot better, angles, moving. And something that you illuminated to me that I hadn't really thought about was, yes, that might have been true, but maybe it's accentuated by the fact that TKZ just did not look like himself in there. And we were talking about it in our pre-show, you know, whether that was the crowd, whether that was the circumstances on Fight Island, you know, having to go through the quarantine, maybe his training was a little, you know, messed up coming into that. But I thought that was a really good point that you made to me that, you know, maybe some of our listeners might have not have thought about was, yes, Ortega looked good. Yes, he made improvements, as you should if you take 2 years off coming off of your first loss. But some of that might have been accentuated by the fact that we did not really see the real Korean Zombie. I feel like we saw Chan Sung Jung. We did not see the Korean Zombie last weekend.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I know we were talking about it, saying that potentially the crowd could have affected that. Maybe the Korean Zombie fights better, performs better under the lights with the crowd roaring in his ears. and maybe it energizes him. For some people, it's different. For me, my analogy to that was, I don't care about the crowd as much. It is always great. It's nice to perform under those that type of pressure and having those nerves to really push you and keep you sharp. But at the end of the day, if I'm in an alleyway and someone's trying to mug me, rape me, steal my shit, jump me, stab me, whatever it is, I'm fighting. Fight or flight senses, they kick on. You know, you're not going to tuck your tail. You're not going to back out. As a fighter, we are going to fight. So that's the way I kind of look at this. And I try not to give the pass too much about, oh, well, you came out flat because there was no crowd. At the end of the day, your coaches are there. Their team is there. You met up like at an old school schoolyard bash. And hey, I'm going to see you at 3:05 after school. Meet me by the playground. It's going down. And that's what happened. And that was the Korean Zombie that we got to see. And that was the Brian Ortega we got to see. I think Ortega looked a lot more calculated, going backwards a lot more and counter-striking as opposed to trying to go forward and push forward with his pressure. I think that was the difference in the adjustments that he made. And the Korean Zombie just looked like he was waiting too long. And then one time he pushed forward, he ran into a beautiful spinning back elbow that set him down. And what he said was he didn't remember anything from rounds pretty much 3, 4, and 5.
Well, and I think it really touches upon the point that you made, because Ortega did come into it with a lot more strategy. You could just tell that he was thinking on more of a technical level. And that really gets kind of doubly over, because in the back, if you watch, I think ESPN MMA posted a clip of it where he's working that exact sequence of the back elbow. So it's not like he was just in there running on instinct. That was clearly something that they drilled over and over and over again. And you don't get to do something like that as seamlessly unless you're technically sound. You're thinking about things 1, 2, 3, 4 steps ahead. And yeah, as you said, unfortunately, I think TKZ came out on his own social media and said rounds 3, 4, and 5 are gone for him. So, you know, kudos to Ortega for coming out and really making the adjustments, because a lot of people, if we remember 2 years ago, I mean, Max Holloway in the fight was trying to teach the guy how to, you know, have some striking defense. So the improvements that he made, I think, are incredibly significant if you go back and look at those final rounds with Holloway.
Yeah. How undermining, demeaning, embarrassing, any type of synonym that you could find for that, if just, I don't know. It's just for someone to be in the middle of the fight, piecing you up and then trying to show you how to prevent it is just, that's just mind blowing and fascinating to just show how comfortable that person is with their skill set and how comfortable they are in the moment in terms of they don't fear anything coming back because they're in there trying to teach you what's going on. And I thought that was pretty funny, pretty grimy at the same time, but it, you know what? It makes for a good story. And, for good entertainment. That's what the business that we're in. We're in the hurt business. And at the same time, we got to entertain. And I think Max Holloway doing that was not facetious, but I think it was just more of his side of like, yo, come on, like step that shit up type of vibe, you know? So that was cool in that sense, but I was like, damn, man, if someone did me dirty like that, I think like, I got to wait for them in the back room or something like, hey, motherfucker, this is what you wanted to do? Whatever. I don't know. I probably would have got my ass kicked again later that night, but I just think that was just, it shows the difference in the levels of Max Holloway then over Brian Ortega then. And this new Brian Ortega, I like this guy. He's new and improved. He got a couple of takedowns. He played it the smart way. He didn't go for the kill with the stand-up. Anytime he hurt the zombie, he took him down, imposed his will, got him tired. And that's what you do against a guy like the Korean Zombie, who's super tough, super durable. And as he's known for his nickname, the Zombie, he just keeps coming back from the dead. Fun fight.
Well, and I think the real takeaway from that, you know, great win by Ortega, tough setback for TKZ. Is the biggest loser not Max Holloway of last weekend? Because everyone was talking about, you know, whilst maybe the trilogy might not have been what everyone was clamoring for, it was certainly an option. Now, I don't think that's an option at all. I think Ortega more than proved himself to be a number one contender. I think Volkanovski himself acknowledged that, you know, as we've seen kind of in some of these matchups, if the champion calls out the challenger, most of the time that fight happens. So I think the real loser of last weekend was Max Holloway. And, you know, I was actually looking at it. The last time Max Holloway has fought three rounds was something like 2016, 2015, something like that. So if he's not in a main event, if he's in a three rounder somewhere, I mean, look out for someone matching up against Max Holloway.
Yeah, I think it's probably the better move for Max Holloway. He's been in so many 25 minute battles at this point. I think it's nice to take a step back And even the same thing, I said this to Weidman. It's like, and obviously Max didn't get like, you know, the KOs and whatnot. So I'm not trying to compare it in that sense in terms of losing. They were very close, split decision and a unanimous decision loss to Volkanovski. But it can be a little refreshing to go back and be like, okay, now I don't have to have all the pressure of the media and everything. I don't have to travel and do all these social media obligation, media obligations. Now I can just focus on a 15-minute fight, maybe be the co-main event or maybe one under that, and it won't have as much pressure, but I can still fight one of the best guys and reposition myself to get back to that title shot position. And I think he's still going to fight a tough, tough guy coming up, but I think it's better sometimes to take that step back, get reinvigorated, fall in love with the sport again. I will say, I feel like Max on paper is better than Volkanovski. I think both fights were razor close, where the first one, I didn't think Max lost and I didn't think Volkanovski won. And the second one, I was even more confused because I felt it was the same exact thing where I thought Max commanded. I think Max won the fight, but kind of got outpointed in those last three, maybe the last two rounds. And that third round could have been a toss up. So I think Brian Ortega getting this chance to get in there opens up a rematch down the line for him versus Max Holloway down the line. And a lot more fun fights at the featherweight division. They could finally get some movement. This was kind of like what happened at the bantamweight division with all the log jamming. And the same thing with Frankie Edgar when he had the immediate rematch, 170, the immediate rematch with Wonderboy and Tyron Woodley. Let's get the life going. Let's get people excited and let's get the interest back there again. So I think this is a fun situation for the UFC to be, a fun problem to have, because now there's more options on the table and a lot of potential fun matchups. I know Josh Emmett is still recovering from surgery. I saw him down to PI, his ACL tear. It's kind of a little funny for me to talk because I still got these Invisaligns in and like my tongue glides off of it. So it's a little weird. So sometimes I got to try to talk slowly to make sure I enunciate my words the proper way. And who you got? You got Zabit taking on Yair finally. We get to see the ninja versus ninja matchup. We got Calvin Kattar. He's still there. And we have some other fun guys in that weight class as well. Edson Barbosa just took out Makwan. You can make a case for him that maybe he should have beat Danny Ige. And I like Danny Ige. I've been training with him down in Vegas. But you can make the case for him that that was a very controversial loss for him. And you could probably propel him into that position to fight one of those guys and get him into that title contention talk, you know. So there's a lot of matchups to be had at this weight class now, and I'm just glad that it's finally over and we can move forward. And we could do a trilogy with Max, but honestly, we can't keep making him fight until the judges get it right, and, you know. And it's hard for me to say the judges got it right because I do think it was that close of a fight where it could have gone either way.
Agreed. And I think one place, you know, moving swiftly through this card that the judges weren't needed and history was made, Jessica Andrade at 125 pounds becomes the first woman in UFC history to win a fight in every division. I think she really went back and she had to go to the drawing board the same way Ortega did. Ortega, longer layoff, only coming off the one loss. Andrade coming off two losses, one of which where she lost her belt, then the split decision loss to Rose. I thought Andrade come out and really proved that she should have been at 125 the whole time. I mean, she is literally the John Lineker of the female division. She comes in there and just is this bowl of power. I thought that what she did in her fight against Chookagian was great to get her name kind of on the 125 radar. And I know we don't want to spend a ton of time talking about it, but her evolution, I thought, especially with the change in weight class, is worth talking about.
Yeah, for sure. Did she fight at 145 though?
No, not yet. I don't think many people have fought at 145.
Yeah, so that's the only weight class she hasn't competed yet in. But under the UFC banner, she's competed at 115, 125, and 135 and have won and potentially been on the cusp of challenging for the title or has challenged for the title and former UFC champion. So that says a lot about her. That, like you said, man, John Lineker of the weight class for sure, Brazilian, and just swings those hands of stone. Caught Caitlin in the clinch and ripped the body. Big right hand. It looked like it either hit the solar plexus or the liver. Maybe it slid over to the liver. Caitlin turned around like, and the most, she just looked like she was in agony as she turned around, just like, ah. So I was like, shot. Oh man, I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know what the hell happened. I was like, did she just get stabbed in there or something? But she turned around and then she realized, like, hey, we're still in a freaking fist fight. Andrade realizes, she comes running at her, then jumps in the air like some spider monkey and just keeps throwing punches and eventually finds the right hand to the body again, folds Caitlin, and she gets the stoppage. You know, that was a tough one to watch. especially because we like Caitlin a lot over here. She trains. She lives right down the block from me, one town over. So sucks. You know, her and my girlfriend, they're pretty cool. And it's just always tough to see a person that you know and care about lose like that, or just lose in general, you know. So it's a rough business, man. It's a rough, rough business. And I think she'll be back if she wants to be. I think it really just depends on where her head is at mentally. Because I will say, I think it looked like she was a little flat in terms of, and this is not to take away anything from Andrade. And this is from, like, whenever you hear females, I think their clock is a little bit different. When they want to have kids and stuff like that, when they want to have a family, I think it's a little bit different from them. I think it's easier for them to want to lose, or I don't want to say easier, but sometimes I think it's more motherly nature to want to hang back and not be as angry and invested and emotionally invested in a fight, to want to get up in the morning and say, hey, I want to be in here right now. I felt like she didn't look like the Caitlin I've seen before, that hunger, that desire to want to compete with the best in the world. And I think it kind of showed. And I think she could have done the same thing that Rose did, her being the bigger fighter as well in comparison to Rose. I think she could have done the same thing, even got her on the ground and tied her up and slowed her down. But I felt like it was just a little bit not the aggressive Caitlin that I'm used to seeing. Like what she did to Antonina Shevchenko, I think she could have done the same thing. But this is what you get sometimes. You know, you get older, you get other things start to become important to you. Just same thing for me. It's like I start to look at other things that are more important other than fighting, that I want to set my future up for, or other things that are more important to me other than partying, or other than, you know, drinking or getting high. Those type of things. Your life changes, your goals changes, your mentality changes with every stage of your life. So I think she might be hitting that certain time period where it's like, maybe she just wants to settle down and have kids and just hang out. She made enough money. She fought for the world title. She's been at the top of the division. I'm not saying she doesn't have it in the tank, but I think you have to be mentally there to want to keep on continuing. And hopefully we do get to see her again. I at least would like to see her if she's going to do one more fight or a couple more, you know, get your paychecks. And hopefully you can go out on top, because at the end of the day, not everyone gets to do that. And to have that opportunity to go on top, I think it's going to be huge for her.
Agreed. And she's got nothing to hang her head about if she does want to hang it up. I mean, she's fallen to 14-4. I mean, there's a lot of fighters in the world that can't say they have a 14-4 record, man, women, child. I don't care who you are. That's impressive. She's fought the best of the best, like you said. And, you know, if that does end up being the case, she's going to raise some damn tough kids. So,
yeah. And then her husband's a state trooper too, so she's gonna definitely have some tough kids.
Well, what
was that?
No, I was just gonna roll right into a tough bastard and Jimmy fucking Crute. Knockout, round one, 2 minutes in on Modestus Bukauskas. I mean, I remember, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years ago, people were clamoring. They're like, oh, who is this guy? Jimmy Crute. And Dana had to come out and be like, yo, that's Jimmy fucking Crute. Put some respect on his name. I mean, that KO that he had on Bukauskas was damn impressive. And I mean, Jimmy Crute's an incredibly young guy. He improves to 12-1. Trying to bring up his age right now. He's only 24 years old. I think in the post-fight interview, I think he asked Megan, like, am I the youngest light heavyweight on the roster? And I mean, he might be.
Yeah, I think so. And his only loss is really coming to Misha Cirkunov, who's in, I've seen him at the PI, and he is a specimen, man. People are running out there.
Sounds like Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, they're crazy. But he's a physical specimen, to say the least. And to see that he even went to that, I don't want to say that far, because it was only one round. But to see that one hiccup to a guy like Misha Cirkunov, who was at a time considered one of the next big things to come out of Canada before he kind of stumbled a little bit, before he won 1, 2, 3, 4 fights in the UFC, before losing to Ozdemir, Glover Teixeira, coming back, beating Pat Cummins, losing to Johnny Walker, and then coming back and beating Jimmy Crute, who is now at the top of his game, couldn't have looked better. I mean, talk about the timing on that. Stepping in, he slipped and ripped the jab when Bukauskas was looking to throw a jab, step into the switch head kick. Now, for him to time the jab, usually you throw that as like a feint. You don't even throw it and commit all the way. You just throw a feint and you step in with the quick switch kick just to get the guy to parry so that they can get the hand out of the way so you can catch him flush with the head kick. So he just slips, rips the right hand, drops him. He's concussed. He's flash knockout right there. He comes to. He hits him again on his way up and cleans his clock with a sure you can uppercut. and sends him reeling backwards into the cage, finishes up the job. I'm like, dude, the guy took like three flash knockouts, went limp three different times that I saw. And I think the ref did a good job in stopping the fight. It looked like he was trying to protest, but I'm like, dude, that was not good. Like, no matter what you say, you could have came back, but that you've taken a lot of damage. You made one little bad read and it cost you the fight. And sometimes it happens like that. And I know from firsthand experience. So I think Bukauskas will come back, and he is himself. Oh man, Topology is down. Damn, boo. So I can't even see his age. Yeah, but Jimmy Crute, 24 years old, and Bukauskas is 26. So he's got a lot of fight left in him as well. Nothing for him to hang his head about. Losing to a guy like Jimmy Crute, who might potentially be fighting for a world title sooner than later at 24 years old, doing what he's done. I think the sky's the limit for that guy.
Agreed. And especially, as we know, light heavyweight. I mean, 24 years old may as well be a baby in that division. You're looking at guys like Glover Teixeira, who are knocking on the door 40 years old, trying to get a title shot. And he very well could be if he comes out and, you know, has an impressive win in his next time out. So I think a big part of that, especially at light heavyweight, comes down to how frequently you're in there, how much people can know your name. And someone whose name everyone should know, because he's seemingly fighting whenever he can get an opportunity, the James Krause, comes in with the decision win over Claudio Silva. And one of the things that I wanted your opinion on, because he's talked about it in the post-fight interview, the reason he was so gung-ho about taking this fight is because he has a fight scheduled, as far as coaching is concerned, over the next like 3 months. And so every week he wanted to be sure that he was prioritizing his fighters. And as someone who, you know, you guys have a huge team, you know, you have a lot of really successful guys that are coming up, you know, Pumi fighting at the end of the month, you're fighting in December. I'm sure there's a ton of fights in there sprinkled in. Marab, we know, has a fight coming up, I think the week before you, right? Something like that. Now, how does that mentality impact someone, you know, like a James, who cares about his fighters so much to the point where, you know, he's putting himself in there to, his name is on the line, nobody else's, right? So he's going in there with his record solely, but he's also kind of going in there knowing, hey, I need to take this fight now, get some money, and then I'm going to go back to coaching because that's my main focus. So as someone whose main focus right now is a championship, how do you kind of blend that as a fighter?
Well, I think with James Krause is a little bit different, and we've spoken about this in the past. And I think for him, he doesn't really care about fighting right now. He makes more of his money doing real estate, running his gym, and he enjoys it. He's got a family. And again, it comes back to stages in your life and what you're trying to accomplish and what time period you are in your life, and what's important to you. So for him, he has a lot more fun coaching and doing all that instead of going through a grueling 8-10 week training camp. He told me he likes the short notice fights. It's a lot easier for him because he's training all the time. He's working with his guys, but he doesn't have to think about the fight the entire time, getting stressed out about it, worried about cutting the weight and everything. He can fight at whichever weight he wants, pretty much, as long as it's a matchup that makes sense, that he can make it competitive. He's okay with taking it. And I think it showed, you know, he wasn't in the greatest of shape, and for him to do what he did, he looked really good in my opinion based on that. But if he was actually in shape, I think you could have only expect that performance to be a lot cleaner and him to be able to do what he did in the first round for all three rounds. Claudio Silva is a tough dude. I got to meet him out in, I want to say it was London. Either way, wherever I met him was London, Liverpool. He's a cool ass dude on a serious win streak. I'm not sure why he was out for so long. I know he got banged up a little bit. And he didn't fight, what was it, like 4 years or something like that, I feel like it was. I know he beat that one guy, Cole Williams, and before that, 2014, Leon Edwards. He beat Leon Edwards in a split decision in the UFC, then didn't fight again until 2018 in March. So a very, very long time, beat Nordin, Taleb, Rene Kachok, Danny Roberts, armbar, Cole Williams, neck crank, submission specialist. And he doesn't look the most physically imposing, which is what I love the most about him.
Yeah, and he ended up breaking his foot in there in one of those injuries. But, I mean, 4 years, like 2014 to 2018, I think is what Tapology is telling us. That's,
yeah, what round was that he broke his foot, he said?
No. That was what led to his layoff.
Yeah. I can imagine it's probably a string of injuries. And it's unfortunate, man, because to see a guy like that have to sideline himself like that for so long, because he's 38 now. You have to ask yourself, like, how much more does he actually have in the gas tank to continuously put out these training camps? Like I said before, these training camps are grueling, and you can see why Krause is more willing to take the short notice fight as opposed to doing everything else. He's got Grant Dawson. He's got I think he works with Martinez too. Chris Gutierrez. He works with Mark Montoya over at Factory X from time to time, or X Factory X, right? Not X Factory. I always mess it up. Factory X. So he goes back and forth, and he's worked with Anthony Smith and those guys. So he's a very, very talented dude. And I got to roll with him a couple years back when I fought Rafael Sunchow. And we had some fun scrambles and exchanges. And that was a cool thing, because obviously he's a 55er, but he was fighting up at the, I think he was doing the TV show at the time, the comeback or whatever it was called. That tough season, it's like a lot of 70-pounders. Eddie Truck Gordon, I think, was on that, and a few other guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like the former UFC guys were in it. And then the guy roided out, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was still on the roster, which was really weird. I was like, did he get cut? I don't think he got cut. Why is he on this? But, yeah.
It's like a pseudo-cut with that. I mean, he took 4 years off. Like, it's kind of a pseudo-cut, right?
Who's that? Krause?
No, I'm talking about Silva.
Oh, no, I was talking about Krause. Yeah, yeah. Right. He did the show. Yeah, he did the show. Now, the other fight that intrigued me as well, probably more than most of these fights on this card, was, there's two of them, the two bantamweight fights. But this one in particular, Thomas Almeida taking on Jonathan Martinez. Martinez, I thought, looked like a stud. To take it on a guy like Thomas Almeida, I think he has that intimidation factor over a lot of guys. And I think... Martinez handled it well. And he said in his post-fight interview, saying like, this is a guy he looked up to, and to be able to fight him, you know, he was ready to pretty much put on a performance and really show out. And I thought he looked very, very good. And I didn't know what type of Thomas Almeida was going to show up, because he's had so many injuries. His eye, he had a bursitis injury to his elbow when I saw him in Vegas. And I see a lot of guys in Vegas. You know, it's weird because you start to see everyone who's banged up. They probably see me. They see me in the PI like, oh, what's the matter with you? Aljamain's hurt with this and this and that. So it could get kind of funky with that. But this was a while ago, so I don't think it's that big of a deal to talk about. You know, I don't want to disclose anyone's injuries going into a fight or anything like that, because that would be a shitty thing to do. But I thought for him to come back, I was excited to see what type of Thomas Almeida we would see. Will we see the same very aggressive, violent Thomas Almeida, takes some damage in the beginning and comes back and just weathers the storm and starts piecing you up, elbows, steps in, liver shots to the body, flying knees. And we saw shades of it, but we didn't get to see a lot of it. He switched to southpaw a lot, was attacking the calf kicks before Martinez could attack the calf kicks. And I think it was the hands, and it was just the left side attacks of Martinez that just seemed to really puzzle Almeida in there.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for being in the octagon, because I didn't think Almeida really looked himself until rounds 2 and 3. Like, it almost took getting bloodied up a little bit for him to be, you know, back in there and back in that, you know, Almeida mode, because, you know, this would have been Martinez's third fight this year. So he's coming in after August. So 2 months. He's fresh. He's ready to go. He's young. As you said, he trains with Factory X. We know that those guys always come prepared. So I think that was probably a tough matchup to begin with. A lot of people were writing off Jonathan Martinez just because Thomas Almeida was this juggernaut before he kind of went on hiatus. So I agree. I thought it was Almeida. A great one. Sorry?
Was Almeida the favorite?
I think so. I think he was favored. It was like a minus 200 favorite. That's definitely from somebody who lost money on betting on Thomas Almeida.
Ah, damn. I thought Thomas was going to win too. But I knew Martinez was tough, crafty. I saw what he did to Frankie Saenz, who's a lot older, but still the way he did it, you can't deny technique and how good and crisp someone can look. No matter how soft the competition look, you can measure someone's skill set. It's the adversity from the level of competition that they fight. Can they and push back when they get pushed a little bit? And he got a little pushback on this one. And that's a guy I got my eyes on for sure, because I think that he's going to be a tough player, top player in this next coming few weeks, to be honest. I think 2021, he's probably going to be ranked in that top 15, possibly top 10, because I think he's got some serious skills, only losing to Andre Sukumtat. And that was a decision a couple years ago in 2018. He's gotten a lot better, and losing to Andre Ewald, split decision. So nothing to be ashamed about with those losses. You know, some of those guys lost to some guys that aren't the best as well. But I think he's made those improvements, and you see every single time he steps in there, he looks better. And I think at this pace, he's on tap to be ranked in the top 15, top 10 at no time.
Well, and if you look, kind of just to put that into perspective, the last four losses that Thomas Almeida have had, The other fighters are Cody Garbrandt, Jimmy Rivera, and Rob Font. So add Jonathan Martinez in that mix, you know, that puts you into pretty rare company.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Martinez is going to be able to look back at his handiwork and be like, man, I did something that only these guys were able to do, because Almeida was a nightmare matchup for a lot of people and put a lot of people away in highlight reel fashion. And even that fight with Jimmy Rivera, he was coming back after being dropped, was able to drop Jimmy Rivera back. That was a ridiculous fight. And I think he showed that he can be the hammer as well as take it. And he might have taken a few steps back just being punished so much in these past few fights. But I think Thomas Almeida could come back and still make a fairly good run at 135. And that was at 145. They both, I don't know what happened, why they took the fight at 145. I think a fight might have fell out for Thomas Almeida, maybe. I don't know if you remember or not. He's only 29 years old. Yeah, he's supposed to fight Alejandro Perez.
Yep.
Marlon Vera, Alejandro Perez, both fights got canceled, and enter Jonathan Martinez. So.
Rough year for Mr. Almeida.
Yeah. Now, the last one I wanted to talk about was Saeed Nurmagomedov. Oh, my God. Oh, Saeed. I'm just going to call him Saeed, man. Damn, dog. Khabib and Saeed. I ain't even going to say the last names no more. I ain't going to do that no more. But that was a fun fight, man. It was crazy because 51 seconds in the first round. Was that 51 seconds? Wow. Oh, man. Oh, hey, man.
He ain't getting paid to be in there for, you know, minutes at a time, brother.
You ain't lying. and he fought Mark Striegel, who I know from MMA Syndicate. Syndicate MMA. Yeah, I'm just bad today. I am just bad today. And, that was a competitive fight, I thought. I thought that would have been a competitive fight, I should say. And Nurmagomedov looked like he was just trying to get the hell out of there. He caught him with that one check hook going backwards, the left hand, right on the chin, sits him down. Mark falls to the single leg. And then he just starts hammering him. And pretty much that was it. There was nothing left to be said. I mean, That was bad, man. I mean, that's at 135. He was fighting at 125. To see him up at this weight kind of gets me like, all right, I got to keep my eye on this guy too now.
Well, and it shows you kind of how weak that single leg, right, was, because if that single leg had any merit to it whatsoever, you're not whipping back punches on it. Like, you're trying to defend it a little more. Like, within seconds, he knew that that single leg had nothing on it, and that's why he just started barreling the punches back down.
He hammered him, man. And I like Mark. He's a good dude. We got to roll a little bit. Positional training down at Syndicate MMA. And I think, yeah, he's a strong fucking guy. Like, those muscles aren't for fake. They aren't for show. Like, he knows how to use them, man. He's a strong dude. So that was a fun workout to have with him and some of those other guys down there. Jerry Shapiro, Shane Shapiro, the Shap brothers, they call him. And I was looking forward to this fight, man. But so it was unfortunate that it had to go like that. I was hoping that it would be a little bit more competitive or go a little bit longer. And, now, I don't know much about Mark. We only rolled that one time, but I see him in the gym all the time. My brother trains with him, was able to train with him more than I was, Marab, Zuka, just because I got banged up with my knee a little bit and my wrist was bothering me again. So I didn't get to roll as much. And this was a couple of weeks ago at this point, maybe like a month and a half ago. So here we are now. Got to get some good training at least. And man, got a fucking world title to win.
You're damn right, Aljo. We got a world title to win. We got a podcast coming later in the week to preview this card. We're going to give some people maybe some free bets, some DraftKings picks. I mean, this is going to be a great week, man. I'm fired up for this card. Take us on out of here.
Yeah, this is a good fight week coming up. I got to make sure I'm staying in touch with the embeddeds because I want to see everything that's happening. I've been listening to some Justin Gaethje interviews, and I have to say, he's making me a goddamn believer that he can go out there and get this done and be the one. I don't know. It's still hard to believe anyone could take out freaking Khabib. But if anyone has convinced me, it's this man. I might have said this for everybody, but nah, this is the one. I feel like there is a one. It's Justin Gaethje. Based on all the things he was saying and the highlights and the clips I was watching while he was narrating the potential strategies and situations that he would have to create for him to have success. And I think he's spot on, man. He's spot on. And I think with Trevor Whitman, I hope to God he did the right work. And I'm not saying I want to see Khabib lose. I love Khabib. I just want to see a competitive fight. That's what I want to see. I want to see a little adversity. I want to see if Khabib really is this god, or if maybe there just hasn't been a good enough competitor yet with the full skill set to give him some pushback from the back when they're on their back, getting back to their feet, X, Y, Z. And I don't want to give away the entire thing. We could definitely wait till next time. But as always, man, if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit. Let's bring it back, bitch, baby. Let's go. That's we got UFC Gold, baby. December.
You gotta go home. 2012. You gotta get to stepping.
2012.
And remember,
it's going down.
The noise because the 12, people 12. Want the funk. Until next time.
And we're coming for gold. Scraps. Al Joe, you know.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.